Well, this morning, the sermon title, Use What You Know, is one of those things that you wouldn't think we'd really need to even bring up or discuss. Of course you're going to use what you know. But it's not quite as obvious as it perhaps always seems. And so we're going to look at the story of David and Goliath, or Goliath if you're from Africa, or Goliath, apparently, if you're from Holland. I just found out this morning. All kinds of different pronunciations, same person. And as the story was read for us, left out a few bits. The lectionary didn't have the whole chapter in there, although he certainly could have read all of it. It's a story we know well. It's a story that's known outside of the confines of the church. Large people are still referred to as Goliaths, so it's not just a religious kind of story. It's a story that has moved into our culture, and you can see why. It's full of drama. We have the nation of Israel on one side, we have the Philistines on the other, and as was at least occasionally the case, the invitation was made to settle the whole thing with rather than a war between two armies, but a fight between two champions, and whoever wins, their whole side wins, and the other side submits, and vice versa, although it didn't always work out quite that well. That was certainly something that was known at that time and has been used off and on subsequent to that. The only problem, of course, is that the Philistines, in a way, are kind of cheating. Now, what you make out of 6 cubits and a span doesn't really matter. The usual translation into imperial measurement is 9 feet, and they were off by a foot, even 2 feet. You still have a massive human being with oversized armor and everything else coming out and saying, okay, one of you guys come over here and we'll fight it out. The Israelites are not unsurprisingly uninterested in doing this. Samuel does make the point, certainly subtly, that they don't trust God or they would have given it a go. And then David shows up. David's there delivering some food to his brothers who are fighting. David is still considered a child, or at least not old enough to be engaged in war. And so when he sees this, his first response is, well, come on, somebody go and take care of this. It's just a Philistine. What difference does it make? And so when that doesn't seem to get anything, he says, okay, I will do it. Well, the first thing, of course, is that David's older brothers tell him, stop being a pest and go home, which is what older siblings have always done. But David goes to Saul and says, don't lose heart on account of this guy. I will take care of it. Saul takes a certain amount of convincing, and the convincing is very easy and is very interesting and also works into our larger theme, if you will, because Saul says, you know, you're not going to go out against this warrior. He's been a warrior for his whole life, and you are just a boy. But David says to Saul, no, you don't understand. I've been a shepherd. And there are various kinds of shepherds. There are some that are better than others. And David appears to have been quite the shepherd. Because if a wolf or a lion or a bear came and grabbed up one of the sheep, the picture I've always had is David running after this bear. And it's always been a bear in my mind because I've seen bears when I've been driving through the mountains. You know, I've seen a lion in a zoo, I think. But it's not the same. I've seen bears out in the wild. And I've always imagined David running after it with his shepherd's staff and whacking it on the back. And so the bear, of course, turns around to see what's going on. David just takes the sheep out of its mouth, and David's okay at that point to just let it go. But if the bear decides it's going to do a bit more, he grabs it by the hair and kills it. Or as a minister of my acquaintance when I was younger, when telling this story to us as young children, say he grabbed it by the mouth and he turned it inside out. Which I don't know whether he did, but it's an image that stuck with me ever since, this boy sort of turning a bear inside out. But the fact remains that he would grab this bear and he'd kill it. Or a lion, which I think we can all agree is a sign of a certain amount of ability when it comes to dealing with yourself in dangerous situations. And Saul is willing to give in, says, okay, well, if you're going to go into war, let me help you. And gives him a helmet and this tunic and all these other things that you have when you're going into battle. And I've always had the picture there of somebody putting on a football helmet. It's too big for them. The kind of thing that if you turn your head quickly, it stays still, and suddenly you're looking into the side of a helmet. And it just isn't going to work. David says, no, I can't go in these. I'm not used to them. So he takes them off and then goes to face Goliath with what he would ordinarily have, a staff, his sling, and he then goes and picks up 5 smooth stones from the stream. When I first heard this, or at least a couple of times I heard this preached, it's important for us to understand exactly what's going on here. We don't really use slings a lot, and a minister of my acquaintance once actually made the point that David was somehow being more compassionate or something by taking a smooth stone instead of a pointy one, which makes absolutely no sense whatsoever. If you have a sling, you have something that's going through the air, you want it as smooth as possible so it goes where you want it to go. A jagged rock is going to go almost anywhere. What we see here isn't that David is doing something unusual. David is doing exactly what he needs to do. Slingers in the military at that time had actually formed rock, like shaped stones. They're about as big as a baseball. And the idea was to get it as round as possible. He picks these up and he then goes and confronts Goliath, who suggests, among other things, that he's being disrespected, and that when Goliath is finished with David, he's just going to feed him to whatever's handy. David's response is, "You come with this sword and spear and javelin," which are good things. They're part of war. When Saul tried to load him up with armor, Saul was doing him a favor, at least he thought he was. But he says, "That's not good enough, because I come against you in the name of the Lord Almighty, God of Israel, and he's going to take care of you." He then slings the rock at him, hits him in the forehead, and subsequently kills him. How many of you have ever been around, not a slingshot, but an actual sling? Anybody? You ever seen what they're like? Absolutely staggering. A good slinger is going to let that rock out of the little fabric thing at about 100 miles an hour. We don't know how far away Goliath was, but I'm guessing it was maybe from here to the end of the sanctuary. It's not surprising that it did some damage. But part of it comes down to, well, so what? Well, it comes back to what the sermon title's all about. Use what you know. Saul tried to load down David with some things that ordinarily you would think would equip you for going into battle. Helmets, maybe greaves, who knows what else he put on him. Armor of some sort. And David said, "No, this doesn't do me any good. Going into battle, going into work, going into anywhere with what you don't know is not the way to be successful. This doesn't preclude us from learning new things, but until you've learned new things, the idea is to use what you know." And this is so sensible that we don't really think about it very often. So I was talking to Haley, I mean, if you're going to go and put up a picture in your house, you're probably going to use a small hammer and a small nail. You're not going to use a sledgehammer and a screw, because that doesn't make any sense. You're going to use what you know works. So ordinarily, we wouldn't think we have to bring this up. But one of the places where we at least occasionally see this is in the church. And so when people in the church, at least now and then, begin to get some idea of something more that needs to be done, more outreach, for example, or they need to rethink some of their, just the way the church works, or church school, or worship, or whatever else it is, often well-meaning people will go to a conference or a seminar or something on evangelism, or on worship, or on child education, whatever it might be. They'll memorize some things, and they'll come back and try and put them to work, where they usually don't. And the reason why they don't is because if you're using a tool that you don't understand, the chances of it working well are slim. You might be gifted in that direction, but they're still slim. What I would challenge us to do, or more to the point, encourage us to continue doing, is that when we look at what the church needs, when we look at what we need to accomplish as the leadership of the church, as an elder, or as a parishioner, as somebody reaching out, talking to your friends, use what you know. Because when you're using what you know, it's not just a matter of making use of your experience, because using what you know involves knowing yourself. So if for some reason the presbytery brought in a seminar on evangelism and gave you perhaps one of those little survey kinds of ways to open doors, or gave you an outline to memorize so you could talk to people about church and about God. And if you know yourself, and you know that you're an introvert, with the spiritual gifts of compassion and help and faith, the chances of you being successful knocking on strangers' doors and reciting what you have memorized are really slim. It doesn't mean there's anything wrong with it. There's nothing wrong with trying things you don't know. But if you want to be successful, if you want to accomplish what you need to do it out of what you already know. And so what we frequently do is we say, well, this is what I know about myself, and this is what I know, therefore I don't have to do those other things. For example, evangelism. We use that one a lot because people tend to fall into these two large groups. Those who say that evangelism is a gift of just a very, very microscopically small part of number of people in the church. So if you're not one of those, you don't have to worry about it. And the others that say everybody has this gift and you should be doing it all the time. Well, it's much like the two ditches. The idea is to drive down the middle of the road, to stay out of either one of those, because neither of those are true. Some people do have a gift of evangelism. But the fact that you don't have it, and I know I don't have it, doesn't mean that I'm somehow relieved of the responsibility of speaking about the wondrous God I worship when the moment is appropriate. But it also doesn't mean that I talk to people about God and that's all I talk about. The truth is in the middle. And when you know yourself, and when you understand who you are, and your personality, and your spiritual gifts, and you have some idea of the experience, your own personal history that's brought you to where you are today, then when the opportunity comes to talk to somebody about where you go to church, in a conversation about the weekend, or someone wonders if there's more to life than what they see, they're in a crisis and they're trying to figure it out, you're going to speak to them about church and about the God you worship in ways that are true to you, because you're going to use what you know. Not a memorized, canned speech, but rather you're going to talk about yourself and about them and the relationship you have. You use what you know when you talk about your grandchildren, your parents, your friends, everything else. Why would it be so different when we talk about the things of faith? It isn't any different. And I'm quite sure that this is something that you're doing already. That when the opportunity arises, when, as I said, you're talking to perhaps your neighbor about what you did this weekend, and church naturally comes up, you're not suddenly going to try and turn yourself into somebody else to talk about church. You're going to remain yourself, your charming, delightful self, and talk about church. And what that looks like is going to be different for all of us. Who knows? Maybe you'll talk about the motorcycles that went by and seem to go by every Sunday in the summer. It's just kind of funny. I mean, obviously it's not every Sunday, but it seems like it. And yet we still manage to go through church, and it's not this big frustration, we're not angry, it's just motorcycles, and sometimes we have to stop and we wait till they're gone, and then away we go. And what you've just done is you've told someone a great deal about this congregation on a Sunday, without trying, without saying, here, let me read out our vision statement, without saying, let me tell you about all the things that we do. What you've told them is that this is a good-humored, tolerant kind of place that just rolls with whatever happens. What you've demonstrated is that the church you go to is a pretty good place to go on a Sunday. Isn't that a more powerful message than the memorized, canned description of how to move into a relationship with God through Jesus? Of course it is. Because it continues the conversation that you have with this person, whether it's your neighbor or someone you work with or someone you just briefly interacted with. Because you're using what you know. And we built a deck a couple of summers ago with Heather's dad's help. Heather and I and Jim built this deck. We used screws in it. There's nothing wrong with using nails. Nothing wrong with using screws, right or otherwise. But if I have to drive nails into a deck that big, I'd still be there. I don't know how he does it. He's in his 80s, and he can drive nails just like, I don't know, like there's push pins into a bulletin board. It's just not something I could do. So I suppose I could have said, well, manly men drive nails, gotten really frustrated, gotten blisters, hated the deck every time I saw it, I don't know. Instead, he just said, no, I'd just rather use screws. Do you mind? He said, no, of course not. You use what you know to accomplish what you need to accomplish, because what you're trying to accomplish is the goal, not what you're using. We wanted a deck. I didn't want an opportunity to prove that I can or can't drive nails or screws. When we're talking to people about where we go to church, when we're talking to people about our relationship with God, the idea is to talk about that. Not to spend all of our time concentrating on the right words, on the right phrases, because nobody cares about those. What we care about is using what we know, being who we are, paying attention to the fact that if we're an introvert or an extrovert, we're going to interact with people differently. Our spiritual gifts will dramatically affect how we interact with people. And that's okay. We are all unique individuals. That's how we're made. Trying to pretend we're all alike is just kind of silly. Use what you know. Grab those opportunities to talk about your faith in ways that you enjoy doing. I don't memorize well, so maybe that's why I have such a bad feeling about being able to like produce a memorized description of anything for anybody. I'd rather just talk about what I like and my own experiences in the language that I already have. And I think that's how we all are. As I said, this is nothing new. This is not this brand new idea for you out there that you should talk to people about what you believe and about where you go to church and the kind of person you are, and that you should try and help those around you, because you all do those things already. It's a reminder that what you're doing is really great. And what you're doing is you're taking all the wondrous experiences that God has poured into you, and you're making them available to the people around you. You don't have to read a book on evangelism to reach out to the people around you. You don't have to take a class in pastoral care to care for your neighbors when they're going through a crisis. You just have to be you. You just have to use what you know. Amen.